Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, a cause that means a great deal to me personally. Thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses. You can hear my story as well as the Williams Formula One team's planning director, Richard Jones, now with more to come. Also, bookings are now open for the Motormouth Charity Karting event with places for the day on July 6th, now on general sale. Enter your team of four to an endurance race and compete with and against a host of motorsport celebs or pro drivers who will be drawn at random to be on your team. Gates open at 12:30 and close at 6 p.m. For all the information and to see who you could be up against, head to motormouthkartrace.com. We'll see you there, and together we can help every single person affected by a brain tumour. Without you and our sponsors, we wouldn't be able to carry on doing what we do, which is bringing you the biggest names in motorsport and delving into their lives and opinions. This season, we couldn't be happier to be teaming up with Devante Tyres. What drives you? The pursuit of excellence never ends. You can now enjoy the thrill of the chase with Pro Tourer Sport from Devante Tyres, featuring the latest innovations in tyre technology, including intelligent water management and precision engineered interlocking tread blocks. Pro Tourer Sport has been designed from the ground up to enhance every aspect of your driving experience. Independently tested at Europe's toughest proving grounds by the most respected names in tyre research, Pro Tourer Sport is at one with the driver. Ask your Devante dealer about Pro Tourer Sport today. Discover Pro Tourer Sport at devante-tyres.com/protourersport.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here. Take two. Today we're joined by a former guest who appeared on the podcast way back in episode 2 when Harry and I were mere boys and we packed our bags and headed north to Manchester to some very lovely studios to chat with our hip-shaking racing northern friend. This time around, he's not alone and I'll come on to that soon. However, one of our guests, Kelvin Fletcher, hails from Oldham, Greater Manchester. And did you know, Harry Benjamin, that Manchester is the first place where the ice cream cone was invented and some would say saved the entire industry? It came at a time, according to the Manchester Evening News, when there were health concerns over the use of licking glasses in eating the frozen treat and poor cleaning and hygiene, yet back in ye olde days, passing disease from one person to the next, so authorities threatened to close the industry altogether. Manchester-based Antonio Valvona's ice cream parlour then created the ice cream cone, and we all lived happily ever after. What do you make of that, Harry Benjamin?
Well, the first time I heard it, I thought it was quite interesting. However, ladies and gentlemen, the second time where we had to re-record because Tim didn't press the big red button, it is still interesting. Manchester, yeah. A hidden gem, I think, amongst the cities. I remember working there actually at the time when we recorded last with our guest.
Right,
can't believe that we actually. the idea of traveling to do a podcast seems so far away from what we do now, just constantly doing them on Zoom. It's great. It's got its benefits, but I do miss that sitting in the same room as someone.
Yeah, as do I. And I've frankly had enough of all this now. Anyway, enough of our rambling. Shall we introduce today's guests?
Yes, two of them, I think so.
Two of them indeed. So Kelvin Fletcher is one of the pair on today's show. The TV star, former Emmerdale legend, winner of Strictly Come Dancing, multiple race winner and British GT4 Pro-Am class champion, alongside another friend of the show, Martin Plowy Plowman. But today alongside him, albeit virtually, is a name you're going to become more and more familiar with. Mo Ritson is a young British slash Indian racing driver from Leeds with aspirations to win the 24 Hours of Le Mans. I also hear he's a dab hand at squash, so I'm certainly up for the challenge. Kelvin, Mo, welcome at the second time of asking to the Motor Mouth podcast. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. Thanks, Tim. Great to be here. And a guest again. You know, it's a privilege. It was a huge honour, I must admit, back in, I think, mid-2019 when I was first on up in Manchester, as you say, which I didn't know about the cone, the ice cream cone. That's an amazing...
You're welcome.
I reuse that again on the next time I'm telling jokes and things about Manchester. Anyway, it was great to be part of that. I think to this day, I've done many podcasts. And I honestly got to say, that's been probably my favourite one. I think the podcast was in its infancy, and I think from that chat that we had, it was clear to see you had grand ambitions, and it's great to sit back now and see you gone from strength to strength. So, well done, richly deserved, and as I say, you know, it's a great honour to be asked back again. So, thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Kelvin, for reeling that off for a second time. the shine doesn't wear off, so we like that. You come back for more, which is brilliant. And you brought a friend as well in Mo Ritson, a young racing driver. And we'll come on to you, Mo, in a second. But Kelvin, let's just start with you first, because as you say, this is your second time coming on to the Motor Mouth podcast. And actually, the last time we spoke, we remember predicting that you might perhaps be appearing on a certain dancing show, but one that was going to be on ice. A few months later, it ended up not being on ice, but you ended up subbing in last minute into Strictly Come Dancing, and you became, the super sub, really, because you won the bloody thing. So you've been a bit busy since we last spoke. How's it all going? Tell us all the Strictly drama. How's it feel to be a winner and be part of history?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, when you kind of hear it back, as you summarize it so eloquently then, but it was bizarre. It's as bizarre as it sounds, you know, coming in as a replacement. You know, we think back to 2019, mid-2020. I think I had a mustache when I was did your podcast,
right.
And the reason why, I'd either just finished or I'd just started my first feature film, a World War II film set in World War II. And that was an independent film for a Canadian company. So that was very excited about that. Obviously, my day job as an actor is kind of first and foremost my biggest passion and, you know, my main profession, if you like. And racing, as we discussed back then, was something that was a hobby that kind of has somewhat become like another career now. And I was very excited about that. And when we talked about a dancing show and Dancing on Ice, I think I'd had some chats with the guys at ITV. And I don't know whether I announced it then, but I was agreed to go and do that show. And then I'd seen Strictly Come Dancing guys 3 years prior to that, on three occasions. Every year we'd met for somewhat an audition. And for whatever reason, my opportunity never kind of was realised. You know, they felt that there was a better casting mix elsewhere. I don't make those decisions. And very much as a jobbing actor, you're used to that, you know. You don't, 9 out of 10 jobs you don't get. So I'm very much used to the sense of rejection. I always call it redirection, not rejection. Mm-hmm. And so you become, you know, impervious to that sort of disappointment and resilient. And, you know, I think that's a great building block for any kind of budding actor to have, because that's something you've got to learn quite quickly from a young age, and something that I did. And I've had a lot of rejection. So,
yeah.
And they got back in touch and said, listen, somebody's injured. There's a spot for you here if you want it. Do you want to take it? And, you know, without doubt, I think for that type of show, Strictly Come Dancing is the pinnacle. I think what it represents, it's a fantastic show visually. I think what it stands for, it's wholeheartedness. It's a family show. It's something you can watch on your own, with your friend, with your nan. I just think it's a real beautiful show, and something that I've watched for many years, and always thought I'd like the challenge to dance, to wear sequins, to learn a new dance. So I got a chance to go and do it. And, you know, little did I know, I guess destiny was played its hand and I went on to win. So it was a huge revelation, really, for me. I didn't think I could dance like that. I was committed and confident that I could apply myself and do my absolute best. But the reception I got, the way the public kind of took me on and took me in their arms was just the most humbling feeling. And yeah, it's been, you know, a real proud moment. And there's a lot of good stuff that's come on the back of it. So it feels like a long time ago now. But yeah, Shutley Come Dancing Champion.
It,
crazy.
It was amazing to watch. And it gave it, for Harry and I, it was, I guess it had that little bit of extra satisfaction knowing that we'd spent some time with you previously. So it gives you that extra vested interest in it. But you were a well-known face already before Strictly. But doing that show, Did you feel the sense of growth in terms of your popularity or being recognised and your fame? Did you feel that sort of uplift, or did anything change?
There is an instant uplift, you know, and I think, not naively, yes, I've been on TV since I was 6 or 7 years old. You know, I've been in the public, in people's living rooms since I was a kid. I've gone through my adolescence, you know, with people watching. It's something I've always known. It's something I've always taken in my stride. And, you know, I feel still pretty grounded. You know, I don't think myself as anything extra special. It's a job. I'm an actor and I've got just as much credit or validation as the guy who's a plumber. And, you know, what I do is I'm lucky to do what I do, but at the same time, I work extremely hard. And I think, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. So there was a bit of a crisis meeting with me being thrown into the show. I think that was a slight advantage as well. I knew of the show, but because I'd not auditioned and not kind of had the months of build up and the big announcement, when it was announced that I was going to be in, the top producer just said, "Listen, Kelvin, we know you've been on TV for many years, but Emmerdale is somewhat under the radar. You've never really been a showbiz in all the papers or anything like that. Things will explode inevitably with this show. There is a lot of press that surrounds it." I personally don't read the press. I don't really have any. It's not really of interest to me. And so I was unaware of the amount you're under the kind of the scope, really. And it's pretty, you know, within a few days, it's paparazzi following you everywhere. And I'd never really had that. So it was an explosion of spotlight and your profile just vamps up. But I'm not aware of that. I don't have Daily Mail apps like my missus has and most people, and watching it, Googling myself. It wasn't really of interest to me. And I just kept things very, very simple. I worked extremely hard in the rehearsal rooms and, you know, I checked my Twitter feed every now and again. And as amongst all the nice stuff, you get quite a bit of the bad stuff as well. And that's just the way it goes, you know. And I think that was a blessing. I came in a little bit naive and didn't really take much notice of anything else. And but yeah, the profile did jump up and you kind of take the rough with the smooth, really. So,
yeah, amazing. One of the reasons that you are not alone today, and I'm going to jump about a little bit here, but you've had some exciting developments on the racetrack since we last saw you. Not only has there been an announcement today, the day that we record, about your new race seat in British GT, which we'll come on to, but you now are the proud owner of your own racing team, which is the reason we have one of your drivers here with us today in Mo Ritson. So first, Kelvin, to you, how on earth did you go from TV to being a racing driver to suddenly becoming the owner of your own team? And then how did you come across Mo?
It's one hell of a juggling act.
It is. Yeah, it's and I actually can't juggle. It's one thing I've always wanted to learn.
I'm surprised you can't do that, because you've got sort of good coordination, good movement. Have you tried recently, like three balls?
I mean, I think I have tried with those juggling sand type bags.
There's
an actor once on set on a show I was on, and I said, "Oh, let's have a go," and I was hopeless. I was terrible. So
you need to talk to Rachel Brooks from Sky Sports F1. She was on the show and decided that she'd show us her juggling, which she's quite good at it with the weighted balls. Very good. So tap her up if you want some juggling.
I certainly will. I guess for us being a team owner, you know, I've been a customer. I've been a, you know, racing cars since 2012. So I still feel not very new to it, but. I still feel I've got many years ahead of within my racing career. But after meeting with Martin Plowman, my teammate, friend, mentor, you know, kind of rock in many ways, is an amazing human, a formidable driver, somebody I've taken a lot of advice from and continues to this day, you know, to make me a better driver. We kind of always had an ambition together to one day continue this, whether it be as drivers or team owners, but in some capacity, we wanted to kind of, we love motorsport. We love everything it brings. And it's not just, motorsport is not just about driving. You know, there's a whole other aspect of motorsport with logistics, with trucks, with personnel, with marketing, with corporate sponsors and hospitality. There's all these facets that we've been able to explore to help us in our own racing careers that I honestly felt that there was an opportunity for us. And like every new business and every new entrepreneur, you kind of feel that you can do something a little bit different, that you've got a unique selling point and things you've learned over the years that you're going to try and do a little bit differently. So we certainly wanted to start our own team. And if I'm honest, it probably happened a little bit sooner than we first envisaged. But an opportunity came. And like anything, you know, we wanted to absolutely go about it in the best way. We started with the Mazda MX-5s and we wanted to use that championship because we identified it as somewhere that was good for racing, good for to start your racing. It was that club racing, that, you know, grassroots racing. Plowy's never done that. He's gone in like so many drivers at go-karting and then when they've stepped into a car, it's either been on the back of a single-seater or with a, you know, huge amount of karting experience. So they're getting into a car, a GT, at quite a high level. And my route into racing was totally different. I started racing classic minis and I was racing, you know, club BRSCC championship level, you know. But I feel that I'm at no loss, you know. And it's just a different route, a far cheaper route. You know, I probably spent in 10 years what Plowy would have spent in a year going go-karting. And when I had people approaching me, friends, customers, various people wanting to get into motorsport, I was kind of sending the Mazda MX-5 route because I've done it. You know, I've raced Bentleys and, you know, LMP3 cars or whatever it is. And I feel that the best way is to go in as cheap as possible and learn some real fundamentals about racing, learn how racing works, learn what it's like to... That's if you're coming from a background of never raced before like I did.
Yeah.
And that's what I try and pass on. And most people in motorsport, they'll probably tell you to skip a few levels and start a bit higher and spend a bit more money. But, you know... I'm too honest, and I don't feel that you necessarily have to do spend an awful lot of money. You know, any motorsport spend is quite often a big spend, but as little as possible, I think, was key. So Mazda MX-5s we felt was a good championship, very competitive, some formidable drivers, but there's a race in it for everybody. So if you're 5 seconds off the pace, you've still got people to race with. If you're absolutely fighting for a 10th here and a 10th there, then you're going to be up, you know, with the quick guys at the front. So it's a great championship, fairly ran. Got a great sense of camaraderie where everybody's in it together. A club feel, nothing too serious. You know, you can turn up in your transit van and sleep in the van, just like I did when I was racing. All of these people there with you know, Hornings and proper race trucks. So, and we launched last year. We had a couple of drivers. We did extremely well. And we kind of found our feet with personnel, with number one mechanics, engineers. And, you know, don't get me wrong, the first day at Mazda MX-5, we turn up in a big truck. We look a little bit out of place in a Mazda MX-5 paddock, you know, with no disrespect, but we've got a £250,000 race truck. We've got engineers with Nick from JRM Bentley for the weekend or whoever it might be, you know, people we've met over the years from RJN.
You can imagine them like, oh, bloody hell, here comes Fletcher.
Who the hell are they?
Who the hell are they? But, you know, like anything, if you're going to do something, personally with me, if you're going to do something, you want to do it right, you know.
Sure.
And I thought, let's make our mistakes there. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to... you know, not do certain things correctly. We're a new team. Yes, we're vastly experienced. Martin's got 20, 30 years driving experience. I've got 10 or 15 years, you know, whether it's through driving or through, you know, as entering in the commercial sense. So I just thought, you know, we've got a lot of experience there, but we are going to make mistakes and let's make them at a very low level. And very much, you know, we want to be in the GT arena. We want to be one of the best GT teams there are, you know, on a domestic and a European international level. And our first foray into that GT world is in the GT Cup. And we identified that series as, again, something that was accessible for amateur drivers. It was accessible for up-and-coming pro talent, you know, like Mo we've got here. And we felt that it was a great opportunity for us to make a statement. You know, not run before we walk in. It's still a, you know, a relatively competitive championship. But we feel it's going to be a springboard to many bigger opportunities in the future. Mm.
Well, it's a really exciting sort of new part of your life and career. Enter Mo Ritson. Mo, we've made you wait long enough. Welcome to the show. First of all, though, let's off the back of what Kelvin said, let's just talk about how, you know, you got your first racing bug and then how this meeting came about and what your role is with Kelvin and his team.
Yeah, so it all kind of jumping back a fair bit. It was all 2017 was where I kind of, that's the point where I was like, you know, we're talking serious now in terms of racing. It was the Ginetta Scholarship was my first kind of taste of racing. I hadn't really done any karting up to then, to be honest. It was all rental karts and corporate karting. So I never really, you know, we never really saw it as a potential career, never mind a hobby or any of that. It was kind of, it was just a bit fun. And it was a Ginetta Scholarship, was actually my birthday present, you know, to have a go in a proper race car and, you know, at a racetrack. This was like dream come true for me. And it was the end of the first day and I got the letter saying, you know, I've made it to the next day for the final. And I was like, am I seeing things? Let's pinch myself, you know, because I never thought, you know, I thought I would never even kind of get off the start line, you know, stalling it every time. But, you know, here I am getting to the final. So that was the first kind of like, okay, you know, this is one, you know, one little step. There's, you know, there's a lot of big steps to go before, you know, before there's a chance to take it seriously. And it was kind of from there, we ended up just, you know, the world of motorsport, everyone knows everyone. As soon as you get along to one event, you meet someone else and they know someone. And it kind of just picked up from there. We met the guys at Tockwith Motorsport and they kind of took me under their wing and, you know, put me through my paces in the karts and, you know, just got me out in a pro kart. And that was, you know, at that point, that was the fastest thing I've ever driven, you know, around the karting track. And before I knew it, I was, you know, getting my racing license and driving the Saxo. And that was a big, you know, right, okay, like, we're going racing now. So it was kind of learning about the sponsorship side of things was big for me. You know, the commercial side, it's not just racing. I hadn't seen this. So I was like, okay, you know, the racing is only 10, 20% of this whole, you know, this whole kind of experience.
So, am I right in saying it all sort of happened fairly quickly, but also fairly late on for a racing driver? You obviously weren't in karts from 4 years old or whatever.
Yeah, I was 17 at the time, 16, 17.
Wow.
You know, I think the first time I got out in a car was 15. But, you know, by the time I'd kind of finally got, you know, got racing, you know, in actual events, I was about 16. You know, and karting-wise, I'd done a bit of karting when I was like 8, you know, the rental stuff. But then I kind of took a back step on it. I was like, you know, I'd love to do this. Like, this would be really cool to do. But I just never thought there was a chance. And it was when I turned about 14, 15, I was like, you know what? You know, same mindset as Kelvin, you know, if you're going to do it, you know, give it everything.
Yeah.
You know, do it properly.
It's the Gerhard Berger school of racing, this, isn't it? Because he was similar. He was like, I don't need that karting business, forget all that. You know, just got by on pure natural talent and drive and ambition. But who's guiding you through this at this point? Do you have family members that have a history of the sport? I mean, one important part, as you know, probably from a commercial perspective and, you know, slightly off-track perspective, is having a team around you to guide you through your career. How are you making these transitions from one thing to the next, you know, jumping into the Saxo, doing brick car, finding yourself in Portimao and things like this? Who's guiding you through this process at this point?
I really didn't have any family members who had any involvement in motorsport. So to be honest, it was me, my mum, my dad and my sister. There was the four of us that really, you know, kind of took it on and, you know, and pushed it. We had loads of help from the Tockwith Motorsport guys who, you know, because they understood, you know, we don't have a clue what's going on. You know, it's this whole big wide world that we don't understand. So it was really a kind of a combination of all these people that we met. And as a family, we just took it head on and we're like, right, we're going to give this everything we've got. So my mum and I were going to networking events, just trying to, you know, communicate with different people within the sport. Where, you know, just to kind of say, look, I'm here. I've got this ambition, you know, to make something out of this, to make a career out of this. And that's how we went through it, really. And we've, you know, my mum and I now understand the commercial side and we know how to approach sponsors and everything like that. And it's been a big, steep learning curve, you know, as a family. It's been tough in some places, but, you know, it's all about the journey. And we've had an amazing time doing it. And we'd like to think there's plenty more years of it to come. Yeah. And working with Kelvin and Plowy, it's another bit of that family feel.
Yeah, well, so Kelvin, when did Mo come onto your radar?
Just hearing Mo speak there, you know, he's, I think, the absolute world of Mo. And I've only kind of known him now for a few months, but he came onto our radar through a mutual friend who was looking out for Mo and looking out for some possible opportunities. And Mo is so eager and enthusiastic and ambitious. You know, I think he's got some fantastic support around him. He talks about his family there who have no real experience in motorsport. I think that's the key in many ways. I've not got any experience in motorsport. My family haven't either. And I think with that, yes, you're a little bit green. Yes, you are going to make mistakes, but you can come at it with fresh eyes and not fall into the usual traps that is set in stone within motorsport that I've seen. There's a lot of sharks out there. There's a lot of dishonesty. There's a lot of short-sightedness, you know, and that naivety, that foolishness, what can be perceived as that from within the paddock, will actually pay dividends. I don't think it is foolish. I don't think it is naive. And I saw a lot of myself in Mo. You know, Mo's approaching this probably 10 or 15 years before I did. You know, I was 28. I was approaching my 30s when I did my arts test. I'd never done any karting, never done anything. It's just a big passion. So I almost saw in Mo just his soft nature, meeting his family. There was just something about him. He had the spark. You know, I'd not even seen him in a car. I'd heard about and I'd seen his results. But again, you know, there's umpteen fast kids out there, fast young people. There's, you know, and unfortunately, you're one of many. You've got to have something else as well, and that's my approach. Because being an actor, my day job has facilitated my racing. You know, my profile as there's a lot of drivers out there that are quicker than me, but you know, there's not many drivers out there with my sort of profile and my kudos factor. So I'm going to use that with the understanding and belief that I will be as quick as those guys. You know, with the help of the likes of Plowey and whatnot. So I saw a lot of myself in Mo, and the way his family approached things, they were just a lovely, genuine family. And it was just like, you know, like I met Martin, you kind of want to build a team around these people. You want this to be the continuous, you want this to be the continuity. And Mo kind of just fits that mold. He fits the ethos. He fits what we want to do. He's ambitious, he's determined, he's talented, but, you know, at the same time, he's willing to learn and he's willing to take on new information. And I think collectively we can all highlight strengths and what we all separately bring to the table and recognise that. So when Mo came on our radar, you know, me and Martin were both delighted to kind of the potential to work with him. And I think we had a test yesterday. I'm away filming at the moment, but I know Mo was in the car yesterday. I don't want to say too much, but, you know, there's a lot of potential there. You know, the kid's absolutely quick. He's so inexperienced as a driver, but yet he's obviously clearly got that natural talent. You know, you add with that his personality, his character, his support network, you know, what they endeavour to do, the way in which they want to go about their motorsport career with that integrity, with that honesty and with that relatability, you know, I think it's key and I think it'd be a great role model. And we're excited, the prospect of working together for, you know, for many years. And in 5-10 years time, we see ourselves as a big GT team, you know, whether that's a direct affiliation with a factory. And, you know, what would be better than to have Mo as one of our drivers and somebody that we somewhat discovered, you know, 10 years ago. So that's the way we see it. We know that motorsport can change from year to year, but we, you know, we're delighted to have Mo in our team. And, you know, we've got really big plans.
It's hugely exciting. And as you say, you've got all the right makings for something that could be very, very successful and hopefully will lead you on to, you know, scoring points, podiums and wins. But crucially, and we will talk more about Mo's racing career and, of course, Paddock Motorsport, but you do both have to now compete in the hardest quiz in motorsport.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, Davanti Tyres. Actually, I'm not going to say anything. I'll leave it to 6-time Olympic cycling champion and racing driver, Sir Chris Hoy.
Whether in my cycling or motorsport career, I'm always looking for that winning edge, the difference between ordinary and extraordinary. I'm Chris Hoy, and I choose Pro Tourer Sport, the new ultra high performance tyre from Davanti.
Did we do this with Kelvin last time? I can't remember.
No, so I thought this was the perfect time on the subject of, you know, teamwork and having the right people around you. Because actually, Kelvin, I think you were, what, episode 3 or something?
Two.
Way
episode
back
two,
when.
Yeah.
And we hadn't actually, we hadn't got everything together yet. So the Motormouth quiz was not in place. So you've got to make it onto the leaderboard. And you're welcome because you've got help in the form of Mo. So hopefully that should really storm you up the leaderboard. Are you ready for the hardest quiz in motorsport?
Yes, let's go. You ready, Mo?
Yeah, I'm all ready.
Right, so at the moment, there are 14 points up for grabs. Points vary depending on how generous I'm feeling, because the questions are very random, but they are to do with you and your careers. So without further ado, question number one. How many racing drivers can you name with the first name Kelvin?
Tough.
Now, I mean, we've got one in the bag, I'm hoping, already.
Who's that?
I don't know.
I'll give you some help here. There are only, all I've been able to find, there are only three in total.
Are we saying them as we...
Yeah, as you think of them, just shout them out.
Kelvin van der Linde.
Yes, correct. I knew I could count on you, Mo.
Great knowledge.
That's one. I mean, you haven't said the obvious one yet, which I'm a bit worried about, but you do need to say out loud.
Kelvin Fletcher.
Thank you very much. Now, can you get the final one? Now, I don't think it's a very tricky one, but see, have a guess if you think.
Is he German?
No, actually.
Scottish. British, okay.
Double check my notes.
Double check Wikipedia.
I have no idea. I thought I was the only one.
No, well, I mean, you're only one of three. And actually, The last one, Kelvin Burt, I don't think is currently...
Oh, you know, of course. Wait, he was in touring cars. He was the one that famous crash in, the Volvo at Thruxton.
There you go.
Am I right? Is it the same guy?
I'll give you half a point for that because I have no idea if you're correct or not. But I feel
Kelvin
like that's...
Burt.
Decent enough knowledge. He did race against David Coulthard way back when in Formula 3000 or something like that. So I don't know how old that might be.
Kelvin Burt, I'm going to have to quickly Google that.
That feels like it should be a full point, Harry. That was a valiant effort. You know, I mean, that's got to be one of the toughest questions we've had. And
that is. Well, you know what? I thought of it the other day. I was thinking, what can we do with Kelvin on the show? And I thought, you know what? Let's just, how many other people are called Kelvin and how many other people in the racing world are called Kelvin? And it turns out...
Yeah, you know what? I can't believe that. It's Kelvin Burt and he had a famous crash at Thruxton that actually the car went over. I think it was in the touring cars and yes. I think it was the Volvo and it went over the actual barricade.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. I'm looking at his Wikipedia. Well, then, full. That is a full. I'm going to give you a full 3 points for that. So yes. That, what I thought would be an absolute disaster, has turned out very well.
Yeah.
Good teamwork there. Right, okay. Question number two. Which team won the overall GT Cup Championship in 2020?
Overall, was that?
The overall. Now, obviously, you're entering the GT Cup this year. But who?
I should know this.
Who were top dogs last
Ginetta,
year?
Wasn't it?
I think it would have been. Was it Orange in the Ginetta? Was it Simon Orange?
I'm looking for a team name.
Team name.
That's all I have on my notes.
Team Hard.
Yep, absolutely. Oh. Spot on. All right, that's another 3 points in the bag.
It's going very well.
It's going quite well, this. Mm. Okay, question three. Now, sadly, he's not here today with us, but when is Martin Plowman's birthday?
Come on, Kelvin.
And we know he's a regular listener. So, and he'll be, I'm sure in particular, he'll be listening to this one.
My little mate, Plowy. I think it was in December? Oh, I don't know. I think it's just been. So, February? I have no idea. Mm. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mo, any guesses? Come on. This is the first thing you should learn about your new quiz.
Come on, Mo, you should know this.
Can you give me a year? Come on, give me a year.
Oh, he's young. He's 87. 1987.
Well done, 1987.
There you go. That was the year of that horrible hurricane. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You might remember that, Harry, but I remember that.
I don't think me and Mo would remember that.
We had Plowy on the show. I can't remember what episode it was, and he brought me and Harry nearly to tears with his accident that he had. I think it was at Snetterton, and when he got impaled on a fence.
Yeah.
And yeah. Really serious accident. And the way he describes it was horrific. He was actually lucky to get out of that one alive, let alone make a recovery and come back racing. Anyway, it's by the by.
Well, I think he'll be crying now because you don't know his birthday. You get 1987, but it was the 3rd of October I'm looking for. 3rd of October, not even close. Wow. But I'll give you a point for the year. Okay, question four before we have a bonus question. Now, obviously, we know Kelvin loves to dance and is the current champion.
No. Bill Bailey has won last year.
I feel like I almost blanked out the last year. You went on it, so I wasn't interested. can you together between you name five dances that are performed on the show?
Easy.
Go on, Mo.
I don't want Kelvin to get all of them.
This isn't my specialty.
Really?
I thought this was written. Isn't this written into the contract that you have to take part in?
It should be. I think we'll have to make some changes to that, won't we? Get that in there.
Do you know any kind of dances? Because they're all the usual kind of ones.
I'm going to guess tango. Is that one?
Yes. Yeah. You can have tango. That's one in the bag.
I didn't do the tango.
Did you not?
No, I didn't do that one. Oh, no, I did it. I think I did actually. Yeah, sorry, ignore me.
Can I get any? Can I get a second? Any takers for another one?
Should I help out? We've got the samba.
Yeah,
you can have the samba. Yeah, that's allowed.
Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Salsa.
Yeah, and that's enough from you, Mo.
Mo, think.
One more. One more.
Yeah, Blackpool. You know, big room.
Or
you could do like a Jailhouse Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, Mo, you've got this. Come
I was going to say ballroom.
Hey, that'll do.
There we go.
Loose.
I'll give you half a point.
Do you know what? I would have said ballroom, Mo.
I think ballroom is probably the overarching genre. I'm imagining
dance,
there are several different. You could have had Viennese waltz, the waltz, jive, cha cha cha, paso doble, rumba. I think
Bolero.
We said samba, didn't we?
Bolero.
The American smooth, the Argentine tango, the Charleston, rock and roll, salsa, or the show dance. Mm. So, who'd have thought we'd be talking about all of that on the Motormouth podcast? But well done. I'll give you 4.5 points for that. Final bonus point for you. We're back to racing now, never fear. In what year was the British GT Championship created?
Ooh, tough.
19.
It's a solid start.
your wit is astounding.
I don't say early 90s, 1991.
Mo, do you think along? You thinking similar?
Very similar. Like early 90s.
You are correct. It is early 90s.
Oh.
But I'm afraid I was looking for 1993.
Oh, close.
I was looking for. And you can still claw a point back if you can guess what it was originally called. It wasn't originally called the British GT Championship. Any ideas?
GT Masters? No. You know, I'm sure they released something recently going back, like, because they had the old famous GT1 cars and everything, didn't they?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
No, you're thinking. No, I'm afraid it was the National Sports GT Championship was the original name in 1993. Very posh, very
happy. So exciting.
Exactly. Oh, so exciting. Right, okay, let's do the math. So that is, it's a decent haul, to be fair.
But did you find the leaderboard, Harry? Because this is a problem, if not.
No, I didn't find the leaderboard. So I've lost the leaderboard. But I do remember it off by heart.
Of course.
And if you score double points, you're on the first page. So you scored 11 out of 14 points, which does put you in the top 10, but I can't tell you exactly where because I can't remember. So we'll follow that up. But top 10, and considering there's about 40 people on the leaderboard and Karun Chandhok is last with 3.5 points, you've absolutely smashed it.
Well done.
Happy with that.
Well done. Yet another career highlight for the both of you, I know. Now, listen, let's turn our attention back to motorsport. Mo, new team, new team family, new series. What are the expectations going into it? Have you got any at this stage, or do you feel like, you know, you're just going to year one, see how it goes, find your feet? What are you thinking for your first time out?
I think it's to develop, to learn and develop as a team. that's the main goal for us. I think everyone in the team would say the exact same thing. You know, we're all in the same boat. You know, it's all a big, you know, it's a big new championship for us. You know, it's the team's first time running the McLaren. It's, you know, we're all coming into it new. And I think, you know, if we can leave this year with, you know, we've learned a lot, we got some solid results, you know, we've developed and, you know, we have a better understanding of each other, we have a better understanding of the car and everything like that. You know, if we can leave with all those positives ticked off, then that's, you know, that's the main thing. There's no kind of, we're not going in there like, yeah, we want to win the first round. There's none of that. It's all, you know, it's just take it as it comes and, you know, just take everything as, you know, a learning opportunity and, you know, take all the positives we can out of it and, you know, of course, enjoy it is, you know, the main thing because it's, you know, it's the start of a big journey for all of us. You
absolutely.
Know,
and for those who are not familiar with the series, just tell us a little bit about it. When is it starting? What tracks are you going to? And a little bit more context around the actual championship.
Yeah, so it's GT Cup. So we'll be starting on the 10th and 11th of April at Donington Park for the first round. So it's a mix. They've got GT4 cars, GT3 cars. They've got some cup cars as well. It's a good, you know, a really good mix of stuff. And I'm pretty sure they've got a full grid this year, in fact. So we'll be going to Snetterton, Silverstone, Donington, Alton, all the kind of, you know, the main UK circuits.
Yeah.
I think we've got about 14 cars in our class, in the GT4 class this year. So it's going to be good. And there's some names that, you know, people will recognise, like Darren Turner, Ollie Webb, yeah. Adam Carroll. So there's some good competition that we're up against, yeah. That we can learn off and, you know, have some good targets to set and everything like that. So it's, you know, shaping up to be the perfect ground to kind of to build on.
Those are some very impressive names, actually. I didn't realise Ollie Webb was in there. I mean, LMP1 driver with Bi Collis, you know, some serious talent. Kelvin, I guess same question to you. You know, do you echo those thoughts? You know, what are your expectations as a boss for this season?
Absolutely. You know, it's very exciting for us. For me, as a team manager, I guess, going into this year, you know, naturally there's responsibilities that'll be on my shoulder, shared with Martin, that we want, you know, that's key for us, you know, delivering on and developing Mo as a driver, developing ourselves with our personnel, with the car, our engineers, you know, right through from our chucky to our number ones. We want the feeling of a family environment, but at the same time, we want to win, we want to compete. You know, let's not make no bones about it. We want to be the top GT team, you know. There's no denying that, and that's going to take some time. But, you know, this is like you guys starting your podcast, you know, in your infancy, you had grand ambitions, but at the same time, you expected to just, you kind of, learn on the job and just figure things out as you go with a loose kind of vision of where you want to kind of go. Experience is key. You know, yes, we want to compete. We want drivers and personnel to develop, but it's absolutely around experience, you know, whether that's through sponsors or through drivers, some of our amateur drivers who are coming with, you know, within the team. For them, racing is can be so hard to get on the grid. When you actually get to race one weekend, yes, we all want to be as fast as possible and compete, but we also want to have that sense of escapism, that sense of a place where you can bring your friends, bring your family, bring your sponsors, and really kind of have a great, you know, weekend away. So that's important to us. That's important for our team ethos, really, is to create that real family environment where we can all be ourselves. We can all be free to make mistakes. When we're all doing great, you know, we're all applauding one another. When we're not doing so great, you know, we're all there to help and pick each other up, because I'll make mistakes. I'm sure Mo will make mistakes. But at the same time, you know, we all pull together. And, you know, for us as a team, is, you know, that sense of camaraderie is absolutely key.
And do you think, I mean, looking ahead to the start of the season, this is going to be a new experience for you, Kelvin, you know, in terms of seeing your own team on the grid for the first time with your own driver. Can you imagine what it's going to be like emotionally when you see your car line up on the grid for that first race and they pull away and you think that's mine, I've done that? You know, have you put yourself into those shoes yet?
Not yet. No, I had a little bit of that moment when we kind of unveiled the livery just recently, and huge sense of pride. You know, me and Martin have got very different roles within the team, you know, but we both feel like we bring something unique to the table, and I can kind of do things that maybe he doesn't do, and vice versa. You know, Martin's exceptional with his detail from personnel, from his, you know, let's not forget Martin, what he's raced and what is, as a successful racing driver, he's pretty much done it all. So it kind of, it's been very instrumental in leveraging those relationships and that credibility that he's got as a driver, that when we've got certain engineers and certain personnel involved with the team, you know, again, we're shooting far beyond the realms of GT Cup, you know, no disrespect to that championship. But that championship is focused wholly on kind of the amateurs with some new blood like Mo coming through. But, you know, the setup that we've got, the race trucks, the facility, everything we've got, really, we're aiming much higher than that. So it's a great place for us to be. We're very excited about that prospect. But I think when I see the car on the grid for the first time, I guess it'll be a little bit emotional, you know. There's been a lot of blood, sweat and tears in order to make that happen. So we're very excited, but at the same time, we're pretty relaxed about it as well. You know, we're one of many teams. We all want the same thing. And, you know, we're quietly confident that we can offer that something a little bit different, you know, as a customer team. We feel that our atmosphere, our sense of being welcomed, you know, I've been there myself as a driver. You know, I've gone to certain teams and you feel nervous. You sometimes feel, do the team believe in me? Are they just taking my money for the weekend and just providing a service? You know, how genuine is this? How sincere is this? And I always want a little bit more of me. You know, it's not just a commercial transaction. It's not just there facilitating your racing. It's much more than that. That's what it's been like for me in my racing career. And I want to kind of emulate that. And I want to make sure that customers who are coming to us, whether they're Mo Standard, who's an aspiring young professional driver, or the businessmen who have put the long earned cash into doing something that they love, you know, they're just as credible, and the sport needs everybody. Every one of those type of drivers, and I want to make sure as a business that we offer them, you know, the most amazing support and the amazing service. And it's not just about competing on the racetrack; it's much more than that. So that's what I want as a customer, because I'm doing this as a team owner, but I'm at the other weekend. I'll be there as racing the Bentley with JRM as a customer. So I know exactly how I've been treated in the past, what I've loved, what teams have done, and what I've not loved that teams have done. So we've kind of taken all those experiences, and that's what we've tried to create with our own team. So we're confident that what we create will be special and unique. But, you know, like I said, we're in our infancy, we're growing. But, you know, don't underestimate us. You know, we've set our sights very high, and anything me and Martin do, we're going to do to our absolute utmost ability. And, you know, the sky is the limit. And, you know, just, I guess, watch this space.
Love it.
How on earth do you manage your life? Because, you know, you're obviously, as you said at the start, your day job is being an actor, which is obviously an incredibly grueling schedule. But then, you know, you've stepped into the team owner world. And now you've just signed on to do GT3 with JRM in British GT this year. How on earth do you balance team owner, driver development, being your own racing driver, developing your own racing driver, being an actor, learning lines, and also that's not even including the family life. How?
Well, as I'm sure you know, the hardest job is being a husband and being a dad. Yeah. You know, it's keeping your wife happy and keeping your children happy is the hardest job, and the job that I fail at more often than not, you know. I think I'm that way inclined. Some people are, some people aren't. I love the sense of business, of much to do, you know, spinning many plates. It's tough, you know, don't get me wrong. My schedule is crazy at times. As a racing driver myself, I'm very ambitious about what we want to achieve in the Bentley this year. It's the car that nobody wants to drive. It's the car that apparently AMs are fearful of and don't want to drive it. I've only ever driven the Bentley, I think I've done 30 laps in total, in the wet at Silverstone. And to say it's a car that doesn't go well in the wet, I thought it was amazing. Much easier than a GT4 car. So already, you know, whether I'm completely deluded or, you know, I'm being a little bit more forgiving with the old Bentley, but I think she's visually looks fantastic, sounds amazing. Commercially, it works for me and my partners for the Bentley brand. So I'm very excited what me and Matt are going to do this year in British GT. As a team owner, you know, I've kind of spoke about that, how excited I am. But as an actor as well, I'm over in Budapest at the minute filming a new drama, which is very exciting. I'm here for 4 weeks, but as soon as I land back in England, I think the next day I'm at Donington for the first round of GT Cup. So I'm very, very busy and I'm spinning a lot of plates, but you know, it's my acting is doing fantastic at the minute. There's a lot of opportunities and a lot of projects I've got this year, and it's just finding that balance really throughout. You know, my two biggest passions in life is motor racing and acting, and I'm able and lucky enough at the minute to kind of manage to juggle them both.
Now, sorry, Harry, I'm just going to say, I'm just going to flip across to Mo, just before we come on to our final three, which I've gone rogue and made it a final four, Harry, you've probably noticed. But Mo, what's the long-term plan for you? Was that when you first started out on this journey, was it single-seaters, Formula One? Do you want to stay down the GT route long-term? I know you've got an interest in Le Mans. Where do you see yourself maybe in, you know, 5 or even 10 years' time, if you can think that far ahead?
The main goal is basically, the way I put it, is put a roof over my head by racing, is the way I see it. You know, whether that's through the route of coaching or, you know, the ideal route is, you know, be a factory driver, you know, get paid to race, basically. You know, be in that position where teams and manufacturers want, you know, me to race for them. Is, you know, that's the ambition, that's the goal. I think single-seaters was never really a kind of a big route for me personally, just with the kind of on the financial side of it. We could see more value to the first sponsors we talked to down the GT route. You know, when we were talking to them about the future, we were like, you know, there is this route down single seaters. It's a very, you know, it's hard to get to the likes of Formula One, you know, by taking that route and, you know, and that kind of that path. And it does cost a lot, but we saw a more, you know, affordable way to get into racing through the GT route. I just think that association of brands, you know, being able to say, look, we're driving a McLaren, you can see that it's a McLaren. You can see that, you know, you put it next to one of the ones you see on the road, people can relate to it. You know, people can have a kind of sense that they understand what you're doing. And I think that was important for us, you know, with having to, you know, bring the money in through sponsors and everything, that was a big driver for, you know, for why we've gone down the GT route. But I think, you know, Le Mans and Daytona 24, they're the two races that I, you know, I would like to think within 5-10 years I'll be racing at. And, you know, the dream Spa 24 as well, you know, I know I share that dream with Kelvin and Plowy as well. It's like we've all got, you know, mutual ambitions and mutual goals to, you know, to race at the same races and, you know, win the same races. So it's, you know, yeah, definitely, you know, definitely the GT route. It feels like it works for us. We feel comfortable.
It's exciting, isn't it? Because you think, you as a young driver, you know, you've got the whole of your career ahead of you. God knows where it's going to take you. Kelvin with the team, God knows where it's going to take you. You know,
I'm excited. I don't know about them, but I'm excited for them.
You could end up, you know, in 10 years' time, it could be that we're seeing Paddock Motorsport sitting there on the grid at the Le Mans 24 in an LMP1 car. I mean, who knows? You just don't know, do you? You don't know what's going to happen. It's so exciting.
Stranger things have happened. You know, yes. A replacement has got called up to do Strictly and said, you've got 1 hour to decide. Yeah. And then you've ended up lifting the glitter ball. So I'm a big believer in, you know, if you apply yourself, and other people can think you've been a bit silly, a bit naive, a bit foolish. But, you know, I'm extremely committed of anything I do. And I know that I see that in Mo as well. You know, he's got an amazing ability to just put you at ease. Whenever you're in his company, there's no ego. There's just an endearing quality of somebody who's hugely mature for his age. He's got a loving family around him. And he's just somebody you want to spend time with. And, you know, and you couple that with what he was doing in the car the other day. You know, he's kind of stresses is an experience, you know, when he's going up against, you know, guys his age. He's not, like you said, you know, he's done the odd go-kart in a rental car and a little bit of Ginetta and in the BMW and the Ginetta. So he's still relatively inexperienced, but the talent is there, you know, it's clear to see. So there's a lot of things to be excited about. And as a team, we're just grateful to have him on board and we're hoping that, you know, this is going to be a long-lasting relationship because, as we've all said before, Mo included, and myself and Plow, we have this mantra, you know, it's not the destination, it's the journey that counts. And, you know, there's no better person to say that than Plow. He's kind of been at the heights of motorsport and he still continues to say, I remember him saying, we made a little speech the night before our last round at British GT, going for the championship in 2019. And we had a little get-together at his house and he made a little speech and I mean, Plowy, he suffers quite badly with anxiety, but sometimes the way he speaks, especially to an open crowd, is just unbelievable. You know, he's got this real ability to, you know, he kind of you forget for a minute that he suffers with anxiety and has these panic attacks. He has these moments of absolute clarity where he's just fantastic. And he made a speech and says, you know, I can honestly say, Kelvin, of all the years, Indy 500, winning Le Mans, he says, this feels the best. It feels seeing you develop as a driver, seeing us get our first podium, this feels the happiest it's been, you know, and that absolutely solidifies what we say. You know, it's all about the journey. It's not just about the destination. And, you know, you've got to take each race and each opportunity that comes in. And, you know, hopefully we're going to go on a great journey with Mo.
Fantastic stuff. Well, now, listen, we have a final three guests. We have a final three questions, which we ask all of our guests. And Mo, I'm going to come to you first. I'm going to ease you into the final three with one of our more highbrow questions. Mo, if you could choose scales or feathers all over your body, which way would you go and why?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think I'd go for feathers, you know. I think it's a bit more flamboyant.
Oh, you know, flamboyant. Yeah, you know, that's different, because usually they're like, you know, feathers, I can fly. Scales, yeah. I can swim fast, potentially. You've just gone for pure peacocking. Like it.
Yeah, it's like if I turn up at a racetrack covered in feathers, I think you know, it's a bit easier to pull off than scales. A little less aerodynamic, but, you know.
Kelvin, how about you? I'm sure you wore a lot of sequins and feathers. Did you wear any feathers when you were in Strictly? Any sort of...
I didn't wear any feathers. I think Alti wore a lot of feathers, and I got quite a few feathers in my mouth when we're doing, pick her up and I'm doing these twirls and whatnot. But I think I must have gone for scales, because weirdly, the first thing I thought of then, it's a weird analogy anyway, but was to think of scales. And the closest thing I could think was the sequins.
Yes.
And I actually quite liked feeling the little sequins and the... So I guess that would feel a little bit like scales. So I'd have to go for the scales route.
See, that you're in the minority there. I would go scales, but not a lot of other people do, because they think they just want to fly with feathers. So I'm glad you said that. Okay, coming back to you, Mo, what has got you excited at the moment?
At the racetrack, it's this season, definitely, working with Kelvin and Plowey. Away from the track, it's the thought of summer, really. Just, you know, nice weather. Get, you know, whether it's sat in my garden or sat in a park, getting outside and just sitting on the grass, and surprisingly, that's getting me more excited than I ever thought it would do.
No, totally with you. Good answer, Kelvin. I guess it's the. It's pretty obvious what's got you excited at the moment, I think, isn't it?
You know, just I guess away from racing, yeah. I'm, you know, hugely excited about paddock. Hugely excited to work with GRM in the Bentley and the British GT. But I'm just excited for the end of these lockdowns, you know, and I hate bringing it up. I hate mentioning the word, the COVID word, because I think we're all very much over it. But when normality resumes, I just can't wait for it, because this is not normal. You know, we are not meant to not embrace and not cuddle one another and meet up. And I think that's when, you know, racetracks, for instance, we've been on test days, and when I was commentating last year, not seeing any spectators, it just didn't feel right. You know, racing's got to be immersive. It's got to be welcoming. It's got to be have that ability to where you can get up close. That's the best thing about British GT. You can go meet the drivers. You can go and have autographs signed. You can go in the garage. We've had kids sit in the car, and that is just absolutely makes our weekend. So the sooner that comes back, the better. So that's something I'm like Mo, you know, sitting on the grass there with a beer, with friends, celebrating. I just can't wait, you know. And I'm sure you guys, well, you want to do your next podcast in person. You want to embrace the people you're interviewing, look in the whites of their eyes. And I think that's something we can all look forward to.
We want to give you a cuddle. Yeah.
get me out of this house.
One word answer. Mo, if you weren't a racing driver, what would you be? There's no plan B.
Yeah.
It's that or nothing.
It's not the most interesting one, but property. Go down the route. Property. I know it's not exciting of things, but it was something I was in. Or actually, no, probably photographer. Because before I got into racing, it was, well, the bit that got me into cars was I used to get a train down to London and go around London car spotting.
Okay. For a weekend. Well, if the racing doesn't work out, Kelvin, you've got yourself a good photographer for the race.
Yeah, exactly.
Win-win. Kelvin, I get a difficult one for you to answer, because you do so many things, but if you weren't an actor, a racing driver, a father, all the rest, what on earth would you be doing?
I always used to say a mechanic. My dad was a mechanic, and I had aspirations to be a mechanic one day, a multi mechanic. But because I'm somewhat delving in cars and a race team and all that now, I'll go for something completely different. And I think lockdown has brought it upon. I've obviously got two young kids, and we've all played our hand at being a teacher during this lockdown period. And my admiration of teachers has just gone up. I love kids. I obviously love my own kids, but I just love their sense of just free, you know, their vulnerability. There's no responsibility. There's no pressure on kids. They can just go out there and live. And I just love their little faces. So I think to be a primary school teacher, it'd be tough. I've experienced a little bit of it at home on the old Zoom class, but it was something that I had great admiration for. And I've got a few friends who are school teachers. But yeah, to be a primary school teacher in another life, I think I'd really enjoy, because I guess the sense of fulfillment and, joy that you'd get from bringing on a young, a young 5, 6, 7 year old or whatever, and seeing them progress throughout the school years, you know, you're playing a pivotal figure within their life, you're an extension of their parents. I think that'd be a great job to have.
So you'd be a Mr. Fletcher then, a hell of a lot more, I imagine.
Like a Mrs. Doubtfire, maybe. I'd like to think I could have fun with the kids. And I don't think I'd be too concerned with schoolwork. I'd be more about, you know, let's go and play, or let's play some pranks on the people's next door.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, final one for you. Mo, we'll go to you first. What are you scared of?
Deep end of a swimming pool.
Oh, yeah.
Stand it. That was a quick answer.
I've thought about that. I can't stand it.
So does that mean that you're one of those people, like if you're swimming in, for example, a coral reef, and then you get to the drop off, the cliff edge of it, and then there's just an expanse of ocean, would that just send you into some sort of meltdown?
It's kind of just like I'll just stop, and it's a few deep breaths, sink. And then paddle back as fast as I can. Yeah, it's not for me. Not for me at all.
I like it. It's a good one.
Elvin, same to you.
Maybe a bit boring now, but missing an opportunity, you know, not getting the most out of an opportunity is my biggest fear. Absolutely. You know, I've missed a lot of opportunities, but at the same time, I'd like to think I've made the most out of most opportunities I've come my way. And that's what's enabled me to do what I'm doing, you know, in every facet of life. With my family, with acting, with racing as a team owner. You know, when you guys reached out to do this podcast, you know, things like that, that it was an opportunity. And to meet new people, to you know, talk about what's passionate, what I find passionate, you obviously share that passion. And you look back at those opportunities and you're so glad that you did them. You know, you feel like you've maximized opportunity and a chance. So when I say opportunity, I don't mean what can you get from that. It's almost, you know, what can you learn from it and what can you give, you know. Just before I did a, you know, a little video for a charity, and that's an opportunity. You get asked inundated with requests like that, but you can't obviously do them all. But those little opportunities when you can make a small difference to somebody else, you know, not necessarily that you benefit yourself, but somebody else may benefit. You know, those sort of opportunities are out there for everybody. And I'm very aware that I get probably quite a few opportunities doing what I do, but I try to make sure that I use every single one and not miss any.
Very good. And yeah, the charity stuff is very important. It's something close to our hearts as well. And I don't need any excuse to mention the charity that we're partnered with, the Brain Tumor Charity, who we partnered with not long ago. We're helping to raise funds for them and joining them for several events this year, some karting events and various other bits and pieces, special podcasts and so on. So make sure to go and Google the Brain Tumor Charity, everybody, and donate whatever you can for an underfunded cause. That brings us to the end of the show. Mo, pleasure meeting you, having you on. Very clear that you've got an old head on young shoulders, and clearly going on to great things. Kelvin, thanks for joining us once again on the show. Best of luck with all your new ventures, especially at Paddock Motorsport. Thank you both for joining us, and we'll see you in a paddock soon.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you back for a third time.
See you then.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out our sponsor, Davanti Tyres. What drives you? The pursuit of excellence never ends. Enjoy the thrill of the chase with Pro Tourer Sport from Davanti Tyres. Pro Tourer Sport is at one with the driver. Ask your Davanti dealer about Pro Tourer Sport today. Discover Pro Tourer Sport at davanti-tyres.com/Pro Tourer Sport. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at @Motormouth_, Instagram at @Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your backyard aren't exactly comfortable, and while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff, like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from sugarcane, they've made the Superlight, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.